Yes, yes, yes. If you heard that music yesterday, it's because we're continuing the theme today, just keeping it consistent. This is Lead Stories. I'm Eutrice Lead, and I do want to get to continuing our discussion from yesterday when we were looking at this evolving political situation. Today, I want to talk about the Jesse Jackson, Bernie Sanders disconnection. 4 days to the Democratic Party's fourth primary, and this one, as you know, is taking place in South Carolina, all eyes are on the state's black vote, which could put Hillary Clinton way ahead of Bernie Sanders on the road to the party's nomination. Or it could validate and broaden the appeal of Sanders' populist campaign. Either way, the South Carolina primary will be a historic marker, a watershed moment, I think, as it was 3 decades ago when the Reverend Jesse Jackson made a long-shot bid for the presidency and found political salvation in the black vote from his home state and support from a then mayor of Burlington, Vermont, Bernie Sanders. So today I'll take a look at the parallels in Jackson's and Sanders' presidential bids and the civil rights leader's sudden aversion, it seems, to progressive politics. Let's take a listen. Here's Bernie Sanders speaking in 1988, on March the 10th, 1988, and he is explaining here, as he launches his candidacy for Congress, he's explaining what he had in common, what his campaign had in common with Jesse Jackson's campaign.
Again, the exciting thing about Jackson's campaign is that this is a guy who comes from the grassroots. We say, well, this guy has never been a senator, he's never been a congressman or a mayor or a governor. That's right. But he has been in the streets. He has put his life on the line fighting not only for the legal rights, the moral rights of black people, but of all working people. This guy has had the guts to be where the action is. He's been on the picket line with strikers. He's been in demonstrations. He has put his life on the line a dozens of different times. And I think one of the things, to be honest with you, that I think is impressing people all over the country, and people say, well, why is Jackson doing so well? I think aside from his political views, where he is touching the nerve of this nation in beginning to speak about issues that other candidates shy away from, about who owns America, the other reason I think that people are responding to him is they appreciate the courage of this guy. He started out with nothing, with no money, a black man attempting to get elected in a system which has never in a million years thought to elect a black person. And I think people are impressed with his courage, with his dynamism, with his willingness to articulate issues that are relevant to the disenfranchised, the poor people. 50% of the people in America have given up on the political process. They don't even vote. Who talks about those people? Who talks about them? Mike Dukakis talk about them? Gephardt talk about them? They're non-human beings. They're not part of the political process. And one of the interesting points, you know, people are talking about, if Jackson gets the nomination, can he win? Well, who knows? And I think what the experts are saying is, yeah, the conservative whites are going to desert him, which is perhaps true. But the interesting question, in fact, the most interesting question that modern American politics has ever seen, and will see, is will the 50% of the poor people, the working people, who are now not participating in the political process, who have given up, can Jackson get some of those people to jump in and say, you know, for the first time in my life, I'm poor, I got nothing, I can't pay my phone bill, I can't pay my health care bills, I'm going to vote because Jesse Jackson is standing up for my rights. Can he begin to get to those people? I think he can. So while in fact he may end up losing some conservative white votes, some racist white votes, I think there is a real chance that he could do what Mondale couldn't do in a million years, as that is to bring millions and millions of poor people and working people into the political arena who in the past never participated. That's the interesting question.
Isn't that mind-boggling? This is Bernie Sanders speaking in 1988, almost 30 years ago. And if you were to switch out the names, you could see how prescient it was. He was literally describing, in effect, his own situation almost 30 years later. But interestingly, I want you to listen to Jesse Jackson speaking just recently with CBS News' Contessa Brewer. And they're talking about the current campaign. And here is Jesse Jackson's assessment of the campaign, and in particular, making a difference between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton.
Is Reverend Jesse Jackson. It's great to see you today.
Good to see you, Contessa.
Let me ask you, when Bernie Sanders endorsed you in 1988 for president, are you thinking that you're going to return the favor?
No, the context of it was a good thing, as we sought to have a multiracial, multicultural rainbow. We won Vermont 8.88 because of that. And it proved that you could really have multicultural campaigns. So it was very meaningful to us, the impact of Vermont, the impact of Jim Hightower in Texas, the impact in Michigan. It laid the groundwork for today's politics.
But you don't feel like because he endorsed you, you need to endorse him?
No, I have a relationship with Bernie and a relationship with Hillary. I have high regard for both of them. My interest right now is as I look at the volleying back and forth on television, what's missed is that the black voter in South Carolina is not the minority vote. It's 55% of the Democratic Party. There are more black Democrats the white Democrats in South Carolina. Second, that one-fourth of the state is in poverty. 1 million people are eligible for Medicaid. 250,000 have no health insurance, slightly more white than black. And we never quite get down to the level of poverty and deprivation in that state. The state 45%, depending upon the federal government in this budget, should not be denying people access to Medicaid expansion. In Bamberg, South Carolina, the hospital that Governor Haley was born in is closed because they refuse to accept Medicaid money. And so we're going to this weekend, going back to South Carolina for about 4 days, working on voter registration and voter turnout and issue development. Voter turnout and issue development.
So I wanted to talk to you specifically about South Carolina because that's your birthplace. It's a place that you go back when there is significant news. You were back there when the Confederate flag was moved off of the state capitol grounds. When you're looking at voters in South Carolina, Democratic voters, do you think that there is the same passion and energy, the same motivation to turn out for a Democratic primary this year that there was for Barack Obama in 2008?
Well, Barack Obama brought to the table lots of energy, and he was first African-American at that level. It was a big deal. When I ran in 84 and 88, I won the state twice. It was challenging to them. and inspiring because it represents progress. I was arrested there in jail in 1960 trying to use a public library. We've come a long way. When I see black and white sitting together putting for Clemson when they play Alabama, I see social changes. And that's why I hope the candidates will get down to what matters to most South Carolinians. A fourth of the state is in poverty. They got poor folks' options. I was talking to a young lady who was waiting tables there about a month ago, and I said, "You're going to college?" She said, "No, I have to buy a car." I said, "A car?" She said, "Yes. My parents have to get to work." She's choosing between transportation, education, health care, food, and the job. Those options should be reduced. We should, in fact, lift our living above that.
But do you see that either one of the Democratic candidates would be better suited to lifting the standard of living for so many Americans of color?
Yeah, the first one would be, for example, the affordable health care. The state has a $7 billion budget.
Right.
And they turned down $14 billion in affordable health care money. That alone would lift many people out of poverty, just the Affordable Health Care Act. You think of a state with a $7 billion budget turning down $14 billion and 60,000 jobs. When you close a hospital in Bamberg, where the governor was born, you have to go to Orangeburg, 40 miles away to the hospital. About like 1,000 people die a year from lack of access. Get down to the issues of people working, but the working poor in that state. And let me say this lastly, Contessa. The state is 30% African American, prisons 70%, prison labor 25%. These are issues that matter. And black colleges, South Carolina State, the only state college in the budget did not get capital improvement. So the issues that resonate on the ground, I don't hear those issues coming through right now.
Before South Carolina primaries happen, we're going to be looking to the Nevada caucuses. And again, the minority population there, roughly half of Nevada's population is people of color, Hispanic, Latino, the vast majority there. And the Culinary Union is a powerful employer, an organizer of employees. They've decided that they're not going to endorse a Democratic candidate this year. Do endorsements matter anyway?
Well, endorsements do matter. It probably is that the administration of the union may have wanted to go one way and the membership another, so they broke the difference by saying, "We'll endorse nobody." But you have, in that state, the issue for the working people is poverty, bilingual education, and immigration policy. And those issues must be addressed forthrightly. Poverty, immigration, and bilingual education, and voter access.
And so when we're talking about Democratic work on that front, do you see a difference in what Bernie Sanders brings to the table in terms of his record and what Hillary Clinton brings to the table in terms of her record?
The real difference, Hillary has this outstanding track record of service, you know, from working with the people in the Delta of Arkansas and Mississippi who are focused on health care and Children's Defense Fund. And it's like she's focused a lot on the great past, and kids 20 years old do not know that past. Friends working on the great right now and the great tomorrow. Right now, student loan debt is greater than credit card debt. That matters. Working for people matters. Lack of access to health care right now matters. And so I think that those who are guiding her campaign must do well to sharpen the focus on today and tomorrow, not just resume.
It sounds to me like you think that the platform that Bernie Sanders is out campaigning on is the one that should be most relevant to people who want to achieve the great American dream.
Right now, he is running a crusade and she's running a campaign. He's focused on issues that are not beyond her zone of interest, that it must be emphasized more. She too has a position that voter Section 4 removed from the Voting Rights Act in Shelby, Alabama, was hurtful. But say that. Black colleges like South Carolina State and Bend, they've lost money because of parent plus loans. Remind you again, the African Americans in South Carolina are the majority, not the minority, and they must be addressed in meaningful ways.
Okay, so let me ask you, when people come out and they're watching, I mean, all these cameras are trained on Bernie Sanders going for the breakfast meeting with Reverend Al Sharpton in Manhattan, saying, oh, he's now going to try and shore up his support among African American voters in South Carolina, and he's going to stop in New York City to do that first. Or on the other hand, you have attention turning to the Congressional Black Caucus that came out and endorsed Hillary Clinton, and elected members of Congress said, we're going to go down to South Carolina, we're going to hit the campaign trail, we're going to work actively to make sure that people turn out to vote for Hillary Clinton. Does it annoy you that people talk about African-American voters as a monolithic voting bloc?
No, I am concerned, however, that we are targeted for voter registration and targeted for voter turnout, but not targeted for development. We took the biggest hit in the recession. In Chicago, they closed 50 public schools, 50 drugstores, 75 grocery stores, unemployment three times the rest of the city. We need a development bank because the big banks use subprime lending schemes and knocked us down. They got bailed out. We got locked out. So down on the ground, where the pain is not being addressed as they attack and counterattack these one-liners. We need express plan for reconstruction. Like the plan, the issue in Flint is not just bad water. That's an ethical issue. It's the crime scene. That's a political issue. But the issue beyond bottled water and pipe water is reconstruction. That means investing money to make people have a livable options.
Reverend Jackson, it's always good of you to join me. I always appreciate your time and your insight, your perspective. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Contessa.
All right. Interesting, isn't it? Now, let's take both of these things together and find out why is there this cognitive dissonance between what Bernie Sanders was saying 28 years ago and what Jesse Jackson is saying now, although ostensibly one could literally say Jackson and Sanders ideologically are of the same, cut from the same cloth. But today, Jesse Jackson is saying Hillary Clinton is running a campaign and Bernie Sanders is running a crusade. You know, the idea of being, hey, listen, you just don't know what you're doing, Bernie. You're running a crusade. She's running a campaign. Therefore, that's why she's winning. Therefore, that's why she deserves to be supported. And I don't even understand where this idea comes from, because it seems to me when Jesse Jackson launched his campaign in 1984, it was all crusade. It was a national and, to some degree, international crusade. And he was opposing the system. And he was running outside of the Democratic Party. And he was running the Rainbow Coalition ticket, saying almost exactly the same thing that Sanders was making a note of 28 years ago. He analyzed Jackson's campaign. Jackson had to take a risk. He had to go up against the machine. He had to hit the streets. He had to do what? He had to organize. He had to do some serious lifting and some hard work to energize a constituency, a national constituency, to bring together all of these groups who hadn't had a history of working with each other. He had to move away from the model of saying we just mobilizing into organizing. And guess what? In 1984, I've said it before in this program, I think Jesse Jackson won. He didn't win in the traditional way of saying, well, he was in the White House. But he won by proving the validity of the idea. And he won by mobilizing and organizing these constituencies. And he won principally by making a differentiation between himself and the Democratic Party as an entity. In other words, the people who flocked to him, and he got almost 3.5 million votes that year in 1984 as a guy, as Sanders noted, no money, spit and chewing gum budget, but he carried 11 primaries. And he won in South Carolina, the same place that Hillary Clinton today is saying is her firewall, her guarantee of success, the firewall that she's talking about, are the same constituencies that Jesse Jackson worked and that Bernie Sanders is trying to reach now. But suddenly, according to Jackson, Hillary is running a campaign. She is efficient. Sanders is running a crusade. He's out of step. And all of that is to explain or to give a plausible explanation for why Jackson is really working for the Democratic Party, the establishment. This is in part to explain the mentality that has seeped in where the so-called leadership are saying, hey, let's go with the person we want to win. She wants it really badly. The fix is in. Let's jump on the bandwagon and help Hillary win, even if she is the worst possible candidate out there. These clowns of the Congressional Black Caucus Political Action Committee. I almost fainted from laughing so hard. They had the unmitigated gall to call a news conference just on the eve of these primaries to announce that the Congressional Black Caucus Political Action Committee is endorsing Sister Hillary. She's one of us, practically, they say. We share the same genes. They just love themselves some Hillary. And then you laugh because you know it's a ruse. The Congressional Black Caucus Political Action Committee is as significant as a fly on the butt of an elephant. You go to their website. I ask you, go visit it and see what they're engaged in. What is the work they are engaged in currently? And you will see three social events. One to honor the staff. One that says it's about a retreat in New York City. And one for, you know, some chairman's dinner. This political action committee has no money to speak of. So I don't know what it is they're doing. And the Political Action Committee is funded by corporate America. The people doing in their constituents. They take money from them, and in exchange, they're going to get all ceremonious and have a news conference to announce that we are endorsing Hillary Clinton. I cracked up. These people have absolutely no power. And certainly, they tried to muddle the waters by saying, we're the Congressional Black Caucus, all 46 members of the Congressional Black Caucus, but they tried to make it look like the Congressional Black Caucus, all 46 members are on Hillary's team. Thank God for Keith Ellison, the congressman from Minnesota, who said, my name is Bennett and I ain't in it. Nobody talked to me. Whatever they're doing over there has nothing to do with the consensus of opinion within the Congress. So there's a strong pull, a gravitational pull, away from common sense, away from any sense of loyalty to their constituencies, and toward the behemoth, the juggernaut, Hillary Clinton, who is destined by God to be the ruler of the planet. And they're all falling in line. So back to Jackson. In 1984, in my view, he scored a major, major, major victory. coming out of nowhere with no real financing to speak of, a ragtag situation, spitting chewing gum, but able to make a point. As Bernie Sanders said, he made an ideological point and an ideological separation from the Democratic Party and got that many votes and won some of the primaries too, including in the state of South Carolina. 4 years later, Jesse Jackson runs again. And this time, he had gone through the conversion process. He was no longer the insurgent. He was a full-fledged hostage of the Democratic Party. And the 3 million votes he got, he literally doubled the second time around. Almost 7 million votes. And what did he do? At the behest of the Democratic Party, they entered into these negotiations. You know, that's what they do. They're, you know, Chicago-style politics. And he gets some goodies, and he sells every single one of those voters out to the Democratic Party. He brings them into the fold. And he brings them into the fold in order to prove, like Al Sharpton and these others that were mentioned today, they bring their own people into the fold as proof of their utility, their usefulness to this Democratic Party. And of course, you know, for some bennies on the side. Nobody so far in this race with Hillary Clinton is able to say what they have exacted or extracted from the woman in exchange for any kind of support that has to do with the aggregate good. Nobody has been able to say that. Yeah, as I talked about the pathology, they throw that out there. Well, we're going to reform the prison system so that we make it more efficient. The doublespeak of Obama today, we're going to shut down Guantanamo, but in the meantime, we will have indefinite sentencing. What are you talking about? The art of talking out of both sides of your mouth at the same time. You don't say what you mean, you don't mean what you say. So, Jesse Jackson, by 1988, personally dismantled the very engine that could today have been one of the most formidable political oppositions to the status quo. He personally killed it. The Rainbow Coalition doesn't exist. And he dismantled it so that the Democratic Party need not be afraid at all of any opposition. It has a stranglehold, that's the firewall that Hillary Clinton is talking about. It has a stranglehold on the black vote because all of the black leaders that are down with the program, the first thing they have to do is pledge their fidelity to the Democratic Party with a straight face. You heard Jesse Jackson talk about in the next 4 days, the black leaders are going to descend on South Carolina. And what are they going to do? In 4 days, we are expected to believe, as he said, they will engage in voter registration, in voter turnout, and on issue development, whatever the heck that means. In 4 days, the good reverend will have us believe that in 4 days, with all these black ambassadors running around trolling for votes for Hillary, some substantive plan is going to be produced and high-level talks had, and we will know what the quid pro quo is. Where is she going to stand on what? They're not asking about Haiti. They're not asking about Flint. Flint is a nice reference point. They're not asking about Detroit and her position on Detroit. They're not asking about the Democratic administration's assault on their own people. The tragedies that they're talking about today have occurred under Obama's 8 years and under Clinton's administration, of which Hillary was co-president of the United States at the time. They're not exacting any price from her on that. They're aiding and abetting the enemy. Now, it's not that I am a Bernie Sanders, I'm pleading for support for Bernie Sanders. It's not about that at all. I'm saying you have to look at the hypocrisy of it all. And you see that this system means you no good. And it's consistent that way. It sees to its own interests, and it sees to its own interests first. Here is the problem. The interests of somebody like a Jesse Jackson are being represented to be the interests of everybody else, and they're not. He has no authority, but he acts like he does. And if he acts like he does, then the community needs to start asking questions of these people. Who the heck are you to demand anything of us? We already made an investment in you. We made an investment in Jesse twice. And what happened? Here we are 30 years later, and we're talking nonsense about you going down to South Carolina to build a firewall for a crazy woman, using your own people as tinder to light that fire. You're nuts. You're crazy. And you're talking with the authority of a statesman. No, you have some questions to answer. And this is the year that the community needs to start asking these questions and start rating people based on what they know the facts to be. Based on Jesse Jackson's crimes against his own community, he shouldn't be allowed anywhere to do anything. I had publicly advocated that there ought to have been a public cancellation of his credentials, whatever they are, or are deemed to be. Those people who built the Rainbow Coalition to sustain independent, his independent candidacy, and by extension, the independent candidacies of a whole bunch of people across the United States. By now, the Rainbow Coalition should have been a bona bona fide party able to sustain independent candidacies. Where does it exist? Doesn't exist. By now, Jesse Jackson's reward should be that he is a statesman whose word could either make or break a Hillary Clinton. Instead, he's still a sycophant, an acolyte, at the table begging for crumbs, and not even to share, begging for crumbs for himself. The community has been extremely tolerant of its traitors. But you have to call them out. And you have to make them pay. These things that are thrown around like statistics, they're just conversational pieces. Well, you know, they shut this down. They took that program away, blah, 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 blah. Well, excuse me. How is it that you see this as being separate from you and your responsibilities? A whole gaggle of legislators singing the praises of Hillary Clinton and how they're falling on their swords for her because she's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And not one of them, not one, the only thing they could say publicly at that news conference that Hillary Clinton absolutely did was that she was there when they asked her to show up to help them raise money to elect black Democrats. I kid you not, that's what they said. She was there. And since she showed up, she deserves to be supported. This is the thinking of people like Charlie Rangel, who's been in Congress since chickens had teeth. And with all of the power that they have, and all of the power they delivered to the Democratic Party, you look at the conditions of their communities and you tell me, who has lost their mind here? Harlem, symbolically, was the seat of black political power in the United States. It certainly was that when there was just one man, Adam Clayton Powell. He made Harlem the seat of political power, and not just in the United States. He was uncompromising. He was clear about his mandate. And he was ferociously loyal to the interests of the people who put him in Congress. To this day, he remains a saint. I know people say, well, he liked women and this. Well, I don't care about that. I know that in the areas where we wanted perfection, we got it. In the areas where we needed staunch support, we got it. In the areas where we needed a fighter, we got it. One man who was not even allowed to get his hair cut in the congressional barbershop, who wasn't even allowed to eat in the congressional dining room, and who could have passed for white and didn't. None of these people could hold a torch to that. But they trade. They trade on your misery. They trade on your deprivation. They trade on your inequality. They trade on your income inequality. They trade on your lack of housing. They trade on your incarceration. They trade on your lack of health care. It's all up for grabs as talking points, not as a plan, not as a demand, and certainly not as something that has come to fruition that exclusively relates to these constituencies that support them. No. Their loyalty is first to the system. And we have to be clear about that. So you can't but note the irony of listening to a Bernie Sanders in 1988, as he was contemplating running for mayor, oddly enough, inspired by the tenacity and gumption of the Rainbow Coalition and Jesse Jackson's run. And then you hear Jesse Jackson say, Hillary is really running a campaign. Bernie is running a crusade, as if that's a bad thing. It tells you how far we have come. The question is, how far are you willing to let this nonsense go? How much longer do you tolerate this kind of backwards sellout leadership? How long are you going to participate in a process that is rigged against you? How long are we going to put up with it? How long are we going to just twiddle our thumbs and wait for the great epiphany, thunderbolt to come through the sky and solve the problem and give us the answer? The people are telling you what you already know. Poor as you are, unemployed as you are, underemployed as you are, dispensable as you are, you still have power. And you have the power to affect them in ways they don't even comprehend. But you won't do it, because A, it's a lot of work. And frankly, we don't have the guts. Worse, we won't even support those people who are doing the work. Because even with our silence, we aid and abet the system. When these elected officials are busy publicly putting their constituencies on the auction block of a putrid political system and a putrid political party that supposedly is their safe haven and running these games, these things must be publicly exposed, condemned, and done something about. You have to do something. You have to seek punishment. The punishment, the best punishment, is to make sure that that system does not survive your generation. Put an end to it. They don't feel upset. Don't get all emotional and drag out a box of Kleenex and feel sorry about what you have to do. No, be real clear. This system cannot be sustained. It should not be supported in any way. That Democratic Party that you're running to and pledging your troth to and your children and your children's children and putting their names in the Bible and leaving money for the Democratic Party in the will, all that kind of nonsense, you have to start examining your own head. You're crazy. There's something fundamentally wrong here. There is a disconnect. And we're acting, all of us, one way or the other, we're acting like lemmings. Like we have to be told what to do. We have to be instructed to see the light. As if the hard truths that we are experiencing and witnessing ourselves, as if that's not enough. But it is my political maxim, a very simple thing. If a party offends you, have no problem yourself offending it. Withdraw. And if it continues to be a repeat offender, then you must seek an alternative. That is to say, you try to destroy it by not participating at all. When people stand up for you, you stand up for them. When people offend you, you publicly excoriate them. And you let the world know you're canceling their insurance policy. They have no further currency with you at all. Most of those people from the Congressional Black Caucus Political Action Committee should have had their policies canceled years ago. They no longer are useful to our aggregate progress. If they ever were. But certainly, over all these years, you see the consistent pattern that this is a career. This is how they make their living. And because they make their livings this way, they will do nothing that harms their ability to make a living. This is not a calling. This is not an avocation or even a vocation for them. This is simply a gig. It's, for some of them, for most of them, the best gig they've ever had. They're not about to let a silly little thing like loyalty and you know, your principles get in the way. They make whatever tactical moves need to be made to secure their employment. And they must take care of the master. And that's what they do. When we look, I had said to you months ago, watch South Carolina. The vast majority of the black vote is still in the South. And come Super Tuesday, that's what everybody's looking for. What's the black vote going to be? And the pressure is on these traitors to now produce in order to remain in good standing on the farm. So that a Jesse Jackson is clear as he makes it known to his patrons. The timetable is we're going down to South Carolina. We're going to do the job. We're going to bring the vote home for you. I have to prove my value and my worth to the system. When Jesse Jackson should be the statesman, he should be the lightning rod for, I should say, against the Democratic Party. He should be the guy who says, look, this year, I'm not encouraging anybody to vote Democratic. Or I encourage you to vote for candidate A and candidate B, and that's it. Vote selectively. This year, I am encouraging you to adopt a different tactic. Vote according to these interests. We have had a national convention under the aegis of the Rainbow Coalition. And these are the priority items. We are supporting only candidates who support these priority items and nobody else. and we are doing strategic voting. What is he talking? Issue development. And this, the election is on Saturday. You got to go down in South Carolina for 4 days and develop some issues. Now, who is, as the great philosopher Aretha Franklin once asked, who's zooming who? You're going to go down, you and your battalion of black ambassadors are going to go down trawling for votes for Hillary because, you see, Bernie is running a crusade and it's now anathema for black folks to be associated with a crusade. I'm still trying to wrap my brain around that. But in 4 days, you're going to get the job done because you understand what you have to do. And that, my dear friends, is where we are. We come back all the time to the central question, what are you going to do about it? Are you with that system? Or are you for something else? Do you have an idea in mind that could get us to that something else? Let's start building the something else. We constantly have to build and rebuild and tool and retool. That's what the system is doing. I explained this current political season as the system, the white supremacist system, making readjustments. Because come 2032, folks, they know what the reality would be in this country. Whites will be the minority population. They are busy reorganizing the assets, reorganizing the power, reorganizing the power equation in this country. You think it's an election. And people like Jesse Jackson are talking about issue development. No, Mr. Jackson, no, Reverend. It's about survival. It's about survival. We have no use for these people anymore. Just let them go. Put them out of our misery. How's that? I want to thank you for joining me today and for allowing me to kind of go off a little bit. But you see, I really love the idea of looking at the connective tissue of things because you understand them so much better when you do that. When you see things separate and unconnected and unhooked from other things, of having no links to other things, then you're perfect foil for whatever they want to run on you. But when you have a context, when you have a history, when you have a reference point, you can't easily be fooled. And history itself is the teacher. It tells you what you have to do. This system has gotten the benefit of time and the benefit of doubt. It has failed spectacularly on both counts. We know this. Now the job is to construct something else. Don't waste another nanosecond trying to fix that. They have scientifically arranged it so that it functions perfectly, but not in your interests or not in our shared interests. So what do we do? That's the eternal question. What do we do? Again, I thank you for joining me. You want to stay tuned, of course. Coming up next is Infectious Myth with David Crowe. You really want to stay tuned for that. You can always reach me at leadstories@gmail.com. I'm trying my best to get current with the torrent of mail, but I love it. And I do want to respond personally to every note that I get. So it will take a little bit of time, but I'll catch up. I want to thank you also for your continued good wishes and your good thoughts and your good energy that you're sending my way. I want you to know that I rely on it every day and I lean on it every day to get me through my own little challenge that I'm dealing with here. So I thank you for that. It's great currency to me, and so I am being very, very careful about protecting it. I'm so lucky to be on the receiving end of all that goodness. A pleasure always, and a great privilege to be in your company. I mean that sincerely. Let's join each other again tomorrow. Bye-bye.